You're listening to Packers Talk Network. PackersTalk.com.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Packers Therapy.
It's Packers Therapy. It's Chris and Dave just minutes following the conclusion of the Packers' disappointing 17-14 loss to the Minnesota Vikings as they inaugurate U.S. Bank Field, U.S. Bank Stadium. I don't know what they're calling it, but
it's by crapping all over
it. It's U.S. Bank something or other. Packers fall to 1-1, Vikings 2-0. Well, Dave, this is something we usually don't do. We usually have a day or so to kind of reflect and review, and you know, we hear other people talk, we think about it ourselves, but this is raw emotion today. This is,
it is
right in the wake of the game, and so we can't be held responsible for anything that we say, but that doesn't make it much different from most of these podcasts anyway. So
right.
Packers lose. They did not look great. Most of the Twitter traffic that I saw, Dave, was blaming, on both sides of the ball. One guy each side of the ball, Demaryius Randall on defense and Aaron Rodgers on offense for the loss. Your unvarnished, in-the-moment, raw feelings.
Yeah, I'm pissed right now. I am right off the game, and all I want to do is just punch the wall. It's not as bad as the Seattle game or some of the others that were, you know, really, really painful, but this one is really makes me mad because, big picture, what tonight told me is that 2015 was not an aberration. That is who we are. Our offense is not very good. And whether we have Jordy Nelson back or not, basically what we've done, we swapped out James Jones for Nelson. Nelson might be a little bit better, but he's not creating separation like, you know, Antonio Holmes or, you know, some of the great wide receivers. So basically it's the same offense as last year. And the arrogance that the Packers display and not being able to adjust to what the defense is giving you is so frustrating, I cannot stand it. So I don't know what you saw tonight, but I'm sure it's going to be a very raw emotion, like you said.
Well, you know, just having finished watching the game 20 minutes ago, it's very simple to draw a straight line from last year, the post-bye. Remember, they went into the bye 6-0, I think, right? Is that correct?
Right. Yeah, they look good,
yeah.
Right.
But since that time, after the bye, they just were sputtering continuously. I think they had a three-game losing streak in there someplace?
At least.
And the offense just seemed out of sync. And so far this year, even though they won a road game at Jacksonville, even though they, you know, lost a close game on the road here, the offense just sort of looks and feels very much like it did last year. Now, the difference that I see is that basically the Packers starters took the preseason off. I mean, generally speaking, Rodgers played two series. Jordy Nelson did not play at all, coming off of an injury. I think there's hope in that it's two games into a regular season in which they didn't really have a lot of, you know, meaningful practice preparation. So while based on what we see right now, it's very simple to say the last 10 games of last year and the first two games of this year, straight line. The difference is in that off season, and things have changed. And I think Jordy Nelson is a better player. Even, I don't know, what do you think? He's 85% right now, 90%. He's a better player at that percentage than James Jones. Well, probably than James Jones ever was. You know, Nelson today was more like Nelson, I thought. He just was moving better. He looked more like himself. Five catches, 73 yards, 14.6 average, and that one play downfield, that was a Jordy kind of play. You know, he went
that
up,
was. But, you know,
yeah,
James
won,
Jones
won
made
the battle.
But James Jones won a few of those battles too, where he jumped up and made catches where he was clearly covered, and he came down with a catch. Yeah. So, I mean, the performance that Jordy Nelson gave you is 5 catches, 73 yards. He had a touchdown. I'm telling you that the difference that he's making in this team is not that different than what James Jones is.
Well, it's 2 games in, though. You know?
But you know what?
It's hard to know. He did not play at all in the preseason, did not play at all last year. The guy's working his way back. I mean, he was. Wouldn't you agree he was better this week against a tougher opponent in a tougher environment than he was last week?
Yeah, I guess, but you would think this was a Minnesota team that was ready to be beat, though. They had a quarterback who played. I mean, if Chris Collinsworth had his way, you'd think this guy was, you know, just give him the MVP right now. I mean, they gushed over Minnesota that whole game. That was so terrible.
Well, they are the team on the ascent. I mean, they're on the rise. It's easy for a lot of people who aren't Packer fans to root for them because, oh, poor Teddy Bridgewater, he tore up his knee. Oh, it was so tragic. The team was all kneeling and praying. And then Adrian Peterson goes down. And so I can see why national people get all excited about the Vikings. And they've never won. They're 0-4 in the Super Bowl. Is this going to be, you know, the year they return? I get the narrative there. And they also have an extremely good defense, a young team. I can see why people get excited about them. The Packers, I think their offense, there is something wrong. There's no doubt about it. And I don't think
something very wrong.
And I don't think Aaron Rodgers is what Aaron Rodgers was pre-bye last year. At the same time, they're playing a very, very good defense. And so I think by the end of the year, this is one of those two when the Vikings are, you know, the number two or three defense in the NFL, you look back at this game and you're saying, well, it's on the road against that defense. No wonder they sucked. And they certainly did offensively.
I disagree. I think you've got to look at the last 10 games last year and the 2 games this year and say the Packers offense is in trouble. There's something very, very wrong. Now, Minnesota's defense might be fine and they might be very good. They might be a top five defense. But there's no reason that we go 3-and-out consistently against any team. I don't care how good that defense is. Something is severely wrong. And so I think this was a Minnesota team that was ready to be beat. The quarterback got a ton of pressure on him. The defense played, I think, good enough. Adrian Peterson had a pathetic game. He rushed for 19 yards. The whole team rushed for 1.4 as an average. This was a team that had to be beat, and the offense could not pull their head out of their butts long enough to do anything, Chris. I don't know what it is. This team, I don't know if it's Aaron Rodgers or it's McCarthy or both, but they have a blind spot right now of either they don't understand how untalented they are and they need to adjust what they're doing, or they are so one-dimensional, I mean, or I guess two-dimensional when you should be four- or five-dimensional in a way. They run the ball or they do plays that take 4 or 5 seconds to develop. There is nothing short. There is nothing 5 to 10 yards in passing. There's no get the ball out and give it to somebody and let them make a play. Everything is down the field. And, Chris, I know that I'm watching from TV, and I don't know everything that's going on. I'm not from the inside. But I know that they're not throwing the ball short. I know when Rodgers rushes, he's got 15 yards of open field before he gets touched. You know, the Packers receivers are going way deep. The defenders are going deep with them. No one is open, and they are not taking advantage of what they're given. And somehow Denver figured this out, and it's been the same ever since, and they have not been able to adjust.
Well, again, I get the temptation of wanting to say that they're the same team they were last year, but the situation is different this year. I mean, for one thing, they have much more of a dynamic playmaking tight end. I don't know that they've really necessarily learned how to use that toy. It's kind of still in the garage. But, you know, that is different. And when they can figure that out a bit, they haven't had a player like that for a couple of years since Jermichael Finley went down.
It's not going to make any difference if he's running 10 to 20 yards down the field like they would with Jermichael Finley. He's not that type of player. Where is he? They had one play tonight where they threw him the ball that was like 9 yards. He turned and had a couple more yards, got a first down. Why they didn't run that play again and again and again to get to the Minnesota's 30-yard line is beyond me. But they ran it once, it worked, and then it seemed like it never came up again. I don't know. This offense is just so sad to watch because I don't think it's the talent, Chris. I think as much as I think Davante Adams is a cancer on this team right now, I mean, he is just a mistake waiting to happen almost at every turn. He makes a good play, makes a bad play, makes a good play, makes a bad play. His fumble almost cost the game right out of the chute. I don't think it's a talent problem. I think it's a scheme problem. Teams know how to beat them, and they are so stubborn. And that defines this team. They're stubborn how they draft and develop, and they don't do free agents. They don't talk to the media. And now they do their offense where they want to do it. And the other thing I'll say, too, Chris, is I'm so sick and tired of, and you pointed out on Twitter, is all the getting to line of scrimmage and pointing and changing the play. I think there was a third down play tonight that was key, and the offense didn't know what the play was as they're at the line of scrimmage. They're looking around. They get the play at the last second, and I thought there was almost an interception because there was confusion that was near the goal line. I think that was the one where Rodgers ran for a touchdown. There was an interception almost before that, and I feel that was directly related to the fact that they're sort of changing stuff up at the line of scrimmage, and no one's on the same page. This is completely broken, Chris, and it's a shame.
Well, I had a different interpretation of the pointing issue after reading Michael Cohen's article, I think it was in yesterday's journal Sentinel, where, you know, he talked that a lot of that pointing on the line and that looking around is due to the silent snap. And so because they can't hear Rodgers call out protections, what they do is they look back at him so they can see him and they can make hand gestures. And that helps them adjust the protections. And then also they have to look to see when he wants the snap. And apparently whenever he makes that motion with his leg, they have a predetermined count, like, you know, 2 beats, 3 beats, whatever it might be, and they might change that up. So a lot of the looking around and the pointing, which looks ridiculous, when you see it on the road, it's because they're trying to get themselves organized and coordinated without the benefit of being able to yell or hear each other. And inside of that stadium, which I understand it was very loud in there, I don't know if it's Metrodome loud, but it was very loud. I mean, that's, I think, one of the things about home field advantage. I mean, you make a lot of noise, you disrupt the other team's offense, and I think we did see that a number of times tonight. I think that instance that we're talking about, you know, is exactly an example. I mean, my tweet was more meant, you know, sarcastically, I guess, the fact that they do the pointing and it looks ridiculous, but I think there's a reason behind why they're doing that pointing, at least on the road. I don't know. It's been a while since we've seen a home Packer game since the end of last regular season. So maybe there's as much ridiculous pointing that goes on at home. We'll find out in person next week. I think we can pay attention to that. By the way, thank you, everyone, who's given money via PayPal to us, because that's allowing Dave and I to go to the game at Lambeau Field next week. We very much appreciate your generosity, and we'll talk more about that later. Right now we have a gaping wound from a 17-14 loss on the road. Dave, one of the things you mentioned in your tweets during the game was, you said, "I'm starting to think the offense is struggling due to Rodgers and not in spite of Rodgers." Why don't you talk more about that?
Yeah, I do. This is the first game that I've really thought that hard. I mean, there may have been fleeting moments when I said that, or maybe I thought it. But I thought tonight, you know what, he is as much part of the problem as I think he's, you know, trying to fight against the problem. You know, part of the thought is, well, they don't have Jordy Nelson, the receivers are young and they're slow, and the scheme is not great, and the offensive line is hurt. You know, there's always other things, but Rodgers is still great in my mind. I thought tonight, and I thought there was a number of tweets that I read tonight that, and you mentioned it too, that when you look at the offense, I think you have to start with Aaron Rodgers of who played the worst tonight. Eddie Lacy didn't have a great game. I mean, there's a lot of dancing around early, and he didn't look like himself. The pitch play that they do, mm-hmm. I know you don't like that, mm-hmm. and I'm starting to come to your side. That is not his best play. I think you line him up with a fullback and let him pound if you're going to run the ball. I don't care if you're going to telegraph it away. That's his best play. But, yeah, tonight I thought Rodgers threw on his back foot a lot. I think he ran out of the pocket when he didn't need to. He didn't hang in there. He threw a lot of balls off target. I think there is a number of bad throws deep, but then even just short passes to Cook and Lacy and others that were short that were off the mark. He's not right. And if he's not, if we just assume greatness from him and the rest falls from there, if he is fallen like Favre fell, mm-hmm. It seemed like he's fallen a lot quicker than Favre did, if he's falling now. If he's now becoming average or kind of Devontae Adams-like, good play, bad play, good play, bad play, then that explains why this offense isn't as good anymore. I mean, if he's now taken three steps back, for whatever reason that is, well, then it makes sense. I mean, they don't have great receivers. I think with Nelson sort of still 85%, you can't look at any of that lineup as being great. They're running a key part of the play of the game. They had James Starks as the running back, and he is average at best. And that fourth and goal, the fourth down play that they ran, absolutely pathetic that they did not kick that field goal. And with James Starks, I mean, if you throw it at least and you make a good play, but maybe it's defended well, at least you can tip your cap to the Vikings. But to go with a fourth and goal and to give it to James Starks, who runs up and down, that guy does not move the pile at all, is absolutely pathetic. But I guess I'm getting away from your point. I think Aaron Rodgers had a really bad game, and I'm kind of looking back on his last 12 to 13 to 14 games and think, he struggled a number of those games. And looking tonight, I thought it was really obvious that he was as much a part of it as anything, and it starts to make me wonder if maybe he's been part of some of the previous ones as well.
I saw a tweet after the game. I think it was from Rob Domofsky, who said that it now has been – is it 11 straight games where Rodgers has not cracked 100 in his quarterback rating? I have to double check that and make sure, but I believe that's what the tweet was. 11 games in a row now without a 100 passer rating from Rodgers. Now here's what Aaron Nagler said during the game on Twitter. Aaron said, "It might be time to start asking what kind of coaching Rodgers is getting and or if he's taking it. Because he looks uncoached tonight."
I think that's fair, right? I mean, he's coming to line of scrimmage and they seem disorganized. He's running around and it seems very haphazard in their approach. I mean, there's rarely a 2 to 3 step drop and hit a guy in stride, and everything's in sync. I mean, I could count those plays tonight on one hand that I thought they did. So I don't know if this offense scheme about beating your man is if that's the problem. I mean, I wonder if they go to the film and there's like 30 plays where they say, "Now, Devontae, you should have turned left and you turned right, and that killed the play." But I don't know what it is that they're doing. But, tell Devontae, don't choose. Just go left. This is the play. Run it, and he's going to hit you in stride. I feel like they're not running that, and it shows on the offense. It looks completely disorganized right now.
It's hard to know how much of that is the playing on the road in a loud environment and how much is disorganization. It's hard to know how things are in reality. And I'll go back to the fourth and one play that they went with 44 instead of 27. And I thought, that was curious until I noted that for the next couple of series – they were going with 44 and not 27. And it makes me wonder, was Lacy hurt? Did his asthma, act up on him again? Was that a conditioning thing? I mean, for some reason or another, it wasn't just that play. It was a couple series after where they were going with Starks, and then Lacy came back then later. So, I don't know the context with that. I don't know if they're going to speak to it. We haven't had the benefit yet of, hearing the post-game stuff to know what they're saying about it, but it did appear to be curious, and it seemed to me as though it wasn't their preferred way to go, but there might have been something else going on that just kept him off the field for a couple of series. I don't know, maybe he had some kind of goof up, where they were taking him out because he wasn't doing what they wanted him to do, and they went with somebody who they thought would be more assignment sure. Hard to know exactly, or it could be as it looked. Maybe they liked the chances with Starks for some reason. I would like to know if that was intentional or if that was just what they had to do given some kind of game circumstance. I mean, was Lacy getting retaped or some reason like that. I have really no idea, but you think in a short yardage situation, especially the way Lacy was running tonight, he was moving the pile tonight. I thought that would have been a perfect situation for him. So that was curious, but let's just forget that for a minute. Why didn't they kick the field goal there? I mean, that,
well,
to me, you know, at that point, they had 7 points. It was a 10-7 game, right, as I recall,
yeah,
at that moment?
I think that's right. They would have tied it.
Right, and so they were having a hard time with the offense. And because of that, the way I was thinking was, okay, you're getting something going here. You're getting a little bit of momentum going. You're only down by three. Tie it, get a reward for what you've done, and maybe that kind of sustains a little bit of that momentum. When they weren't able to get something out of that drive, I mean, they were finally moving the ball a little bit, to not get something on the back end of it, that bothered me. And I would have liked, in that situation, down by 3 points, go ahead and tie it at that point, rather than, you know, go for it. That to me didn't seem like a go for it kind of situation. And then to, especially if they knew that they were going to have to play with Starks for whatever reason, you know, that Starks was going to be their guy, you know, maybe they wanted to go for it, but they, with the personnel they had, if you have to go with Starks, why not kick the field goal, get the tie,
absolutely,
and get some momentum. And that decision, did bother me a little bit. I would have liked the points there, but I think I'm probably more, you know, conservative than the stats guys say you should be. But in that circumstance, that seemed to be the smart play to me.
Yeah, and I'm probably more aggressive than the stats guy would be. I would normally say I'm in the camp that you should always go for it on fourth down sometimes and just play that way forever and see how that would go. I mean, I wouldn't actually probably really do that, but there's an element of me that would do that. That was a moment where, in the grand context of the game, where the defense is playing really well, even though Minnesota moved the ball, I just don't feel like they were ever very solid on offense. I thought our defense did a very good job. That was a no-brainer to kick that field goal to me. I do not understand why they did that. I think it's what's happening is they're trying to overcome some problem they have on offense by saying, I want to tell my offense that we have confidence in them, and we're going to go for it, when that overruled just a common-sense decision. You absolutely tie the game. I mean, it was late in the game, right? It was after halftime.
It was
the third quarter.
5 minutes to go in the third quarter.
Yeah, this is not the time when you take chances. You tie the game and you get on defense. Now, if you're getting burned on defense left and right, or this is a late in the fourth quarter and you've got to take a chance, that's one thing. But that was an idiotic move. I don't know if it's, you know, somehow Rodgers is influencing calls because, you know, he wants to always go for it, I'm sure.
Right, sure.
Or if McCarthy is just losing his mind because he's caught up in the madness of what this offense is doing right now, but that was a completely idiotic decision. I would think the Bob McGinns of the world, given some time to think this through, will crucify them for that decision. I can't think of any scenario where I thought that was a good move, given the context of the game. Our defense is playing well. You tie it up, and you dig in on defense. Absolutely, that was so stupid, Chris.
Well, here's one from the real Greg X. I think he's using all the footballs right now as his handle on Twitter. He tweeted at us. He said, "I'm starting to wonder if we have seen the last of the AR-12 we know and love. Last season, we blamed it on Jordy. Now?" And that's interesting. I mean, that is kind of the central question that we're asking. Are the problems that have existed on offense because of scheme? Is it because the guy they rely on so much, the trigger man, Rodgers, is not what he was? Did he suddenly, during the bye week last year, something happened with him? I kind of doubt that. Did teams just figure out this offense? Or is it a case, you know, where they – you know, haven't really integrated Jordy back in. They haven't really figured out the proper way to use Jared Cook. I mean, is it just because they basically rested throughout the preseason and are still finding their way? It's really tough to know at this time. What we do know is that the Packer offense that we showed, now the defense, like you mentioned, Dave, was good enough to win. There's no doubt about that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
They're good enough to take us far this season.
I mean,
absolutely.
I was very pleased the way they shut down Peterson. And it was a damn shame what happened to Peterson getting hurt. you know, when a thoroughbred goes down like that, you drag him behind the chemical sheds and you put a bullet in him. So maybe we've seen the last of Adrian Peterson. Anyway.
I wouldn't want to be his son tonight.
Yeah, somebody mentioned that on Twitter. did you see that one where when he went down and I wish I knew who it was because it went by so quickly, but I'm assuming it's a he. He said, that looked like it hurt real bad, almost like getting hit with a switch in your balls. And I thought, boy, I bet you the guy was just waiting for that moment.
Yeah, we all are. We all, yeah. He deserves it. Hey, can I say something about the offense?
Sure, sure. Yeah.
I think when you talk about teams that figured out this offense, I think there's two things that could help this offense kind of get past what is the problem. First of all, the one thing I don't think we're going to be able to correct it with is that if we had a running quarterback, if we had Cam Newton or Russell Wilson, receivers would be open because teams know that Rodgers are probably they're telling him don't run because we can't afford to lose him. But when he breaks away from the rush, I don't know if I've ever seen so much open field between when he runs to the first defender. I mean, it is like 10 to 15 yards because we're running deep and every linebacker and defensive back is playing deep and running with them. So when he breaks through, I was thinking if we're going to score in the last drive, it was going to be Rodgers running 10 yards at a clip every single time. And I wonder if they would have put in – who's their backup? I'm too angry to, like, have good recall. Who's their backup quarterback?
You mean the guy that started the first game for them?
UCLA. Not the guy from Wellesley College.
You mean Brett Huntley. Yeah, for the past.
Brett Huntley.
Yeah,
okay. If you had put him in and said, Brett, what we want you to do is we want you to go out there and run, I think we would have moved right down the field. Because there is a lot of real estate open if Rodgers decides to go. The second thing is they're not respecting the fact in that short field because we don't throw to our running backs. Tonight we threw to James Starks once, which was a great play, a great call. It went for 16 yards. That was late because it's so open. We threw to Eddie Lacy one time, but it was for zero, and that's it. I watched a lot of football this weekend, Chris, and there is – most offenses have a number of pass plays to the running back where they go out in the pattern or they block and they turn around and they catch the ball and go 5 yards. We do none of that. That is not part of our offense. We go deep. We run around out there. Our guys are not particularly fast. And we have four guys out there and seven guys in coverage or whatever the number is. And we can't get open. And the middle of that field is wide open. Now, tonight, there's a little bit of Cook that kind of exploited that, but it was too little, too late. And then Rodgers fumbled the ball on that drive where we sort of started to figure that out. But until Rodgers, McCarthy, the rest of them figure out that we've got to be a run team, we have to have short, intermediate, and long-term passes so the defense can't just key in one. We're just going to struggle all year.
Well, the Packers are now 6-8 since starting out 6-0 last season. So that kind of, you know, is the stark reality that we are faced with right now. But, you know, seasons are not running continuously. I mean, they had an entire off season. They, you know, added some personnel. We mentioned already Jordy Nelson, Jared Cook. You know, things are different now. And I guess Aaron Rodgers at the podium has been, you know, preaching patience. I don't know if he spelled out relax for anybody, but according to the Twitter feed that I'm looking at, that's the story he's sticking to. So we're going to see. We will see in person next week against the Lions at Lambeau Field. Let's see if there's a bit of an uptake. Let's see if they look better at home than they have. Or maybe it's a case where they've been doing the same kind of stuff now. This is the, 10th season, right, that they've had? Or is it 11th season? They started in 2006 with McCarthy, so this will be the 11th season. Maybe people kind of have, you know, got a handle on it. Aaron Rodgers doesn't seem to be as accurate as he might have been before. I mean, he was missing high a lot during this game, and that by itself is troubling because that's kind of what was happening last year. He leaving balls short, he was leaving balls high. He didn't have the same kind of precision. So you wonder, you know, his guy's going to be, 32 years old in December? I think that's what it is. That's not that old, especially for an NFL quarterback who takes good care of himself. But, you know, aging affects everybody differently. You don't know if he has complete confidence in his offensive line. You know, today, one of the fumbles was caused when Bulaga got badly beaten around the edge, and there was a strip sack. So that was a problem. Bakhtiari got beat today for the first time in forever. And I don't know how comfortable Rodgers is with Lane Taylor in front of him. You know, so maybe those kinds of things have contributed to Rodgers maybe not being as comfortable or confident in what he has to work with. And the fact that as you get older and you face things more and you've been hit more, you know, you might not want to stick around in the pocket or do the same things that he might have been doing, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. So it's hard to really, you know, sort it all out other than the fact that offense did not look good, granted, in a tough environment against a good defense, but it's something to watch out for as we go forward. 1-1, it's not a disastrous start or anything like that to the season, and you'd like to think they can beat the Lions next week and go 2-1, but it's just raising enough of a concern that you wonder, are we going to face the same thing this year that they had for the last 10 games of last season?
Yeah, I agree. And it's no fun to watch this team on offense when they play so poorly. Mm-hmm. How many 3-and-outs did they have?
Do you have in front of you there?
So I have they punted after they fumbled. They scored a touchdown. Then it was 5 plays in punt, 3 plays in punt, 6 plays in punt, and then end of the half. Then they came back and 3 plays in punt, 10 plays in downs, then they scored, fumble, interception. So the key part, you know, the middle of the game, they won, then touchdown, but then 2, 3, 4, 5 in downs. So they had 6 unsuccessful drives where, you know, you can't ask the defense to play anymore. I mean, I know Demaryius Randall had a tough
mm-hmm.
game.
Yes.
You know, Bradford. And this is what the NFL is right now, and it's starting to make me a little sick, is that you throw balls up in the air, and then the refs decide whether they're going to give it to you or not. So it's almost like the NBA. You go for a drive, and there's the offense, the defense, and the refs. It's like a third, a third, a third, and that's how the game is decided. Football, it was always maybe the refs were 10% or 15%. Well, now, like the game tonight, it felt like a third, a third, a third again, and that's no fun to watch. I don't want to watch someone's interpretation of plays. I want to see a man beat a man. I mean, that play at the fourth down or the last play of the game where they got a first down and the game was basically over. I mean, I think Demaryius Randall, I think if you could call that a penalty, then I think you got to call a penalty on the play that Nelson ran into near the end zone. I mean, he ran into Nelson and stopped him from running unimpeded to the end zone. So the refs were a huge part of this game. That was no fun. I don't even know where I was going with this ramble.
You were just outraged.
I am. I'm outraged. I'm really upset by this game. This is they've got to fix something, and I want them to see them do something different next week rather than just do what they do and execute it better. They're not going to execute it better. They've got to do something where they got to scrap the playbook. Someone said, McCarthy tweeted to me, I think it was Nick from the Bucky Channel. I think he said, McCarthy needs to go to Denny's and get a new menu.
Yeah, I saw that.
I felt like that's true. They got to, whatever they're trying to do, I think they need to say, at the bye week, we need to kind of scrap that and start over. I don't know, which is extreme.
I just don't think they'll do that because it's not the way they do it, you know? So
they're arrogant, yes. They do what they do.
I don't know if I call it arrogance or the fact that this is what has worked. This is what they believe is the right way to work. They had that confirmed by, you know, winning a Super Bowl and making the playoffs and winning in the division and all that kind of stuff. And they should have gone again in that Seattle game, too. You know, it's –
sure.
The thing is, you, and it's this way regardless of what it is that you do. If you're successful at something for a period of time, you stay with it. Partially because that's the way you're programmed. This is the way we want to do things, and then it works. And you say, see, I'm confirmed. The way I like to do things is successful. But as things change over time, that's when it gets tough to say, you know, we've always done these isolation routes. Now I'm going to try, you know, a different philosophy, something that I haven't believed in for 20 years. And that's a really hard change for anybody to make, because it's fundamentally you chose to go the way you did because you believed it to be right, and the results had given you reason to believe that you were right to believe in that.
But, Chris,
you know,
think about it.
Very tough. Sorry.
If you do the same thing over and over and over in a competitive situation, people will keep trying different things until they figure out a way to beat
sure,
you.
Absolutely.
And I think they've – from that Denver game on, I think there's been a philosophy of how you play the Packers, and it's worked. And so now it's on the Packers to adjust. And I don't know. McCarthy could stick to his guns all the way till the time he's fired, or he could adjust. And I think tonight is a wake-up call for them. I think they can – last year they could lean on the fact that Jordy, oh, what are you going to do? We had all these injuries. But now I think they this was a team that was ready to be beat. They had the personnel to beat them, and they failed. I mean, they failed a number of options.
So.
They failed because they, like you said, they didn't have any practice in the preseason.
Right.
They didn't have any live ammunition in preseason. They stuck to what they do all the time in like I said, not having some kind of a short, intermediate, and long passing game. And they're relying on guys that I think are just not super talented, like Adams. And I don't know what they're doing with the running back situation, with having Cobb in there, Starks in there, and Lacy sometimes. They're in disarray right now.
Well,
but
I see. I don't know that this loss is as bad as you're saying it is, because it's not like they got beat by some stumble bums, you know, like those, you know.
They were.
It was like
no,
lacrosse
I agree.
Hey, Dave, no, this is a good team. Sam Bradford aside, this is a
– No, you can't aside Bradford.
Look.
He just joined the team.
They are a really good defensive team right there. Right – if they have zero offense – you still are going to be facing. I mean, if their offense couldn't put their pants on straight and scored 0 points, you still got to face that defense, and that defense is really, really good. It wasn't like they got beat by some half-assed group. And the fact is, they're playing on the road. Yeah, they didn't look good today, but they didn't look good against a good team, and a team that is. Their defense won the game for him last week, probably won the game for him again this week. That is a good group. It wasn't like they got beat by some cellar dweller at home. It wasn't like that. It wasn't like the Lions game we saw last year.
Yeah, but we haven't had a chance to play the Lions
at
home yet.
You know?
Well, they played just like they did when they lost to the Lions last year. We thought Jacksonville was an upcoming team last week because they played the Packers so well. Well, they just got their tail kicked by San Diego.
Well, yeah, but wasn't that at San Diego?
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. San Diego.
The research on that's clear. Teams going west to east, or east to west. If you've got to go across the country, and that's, what is that, a five-hour flight? You're really goofed up. I mean, it's hard enough from the Midwest, but going coast to coast on the road, those teams rarely win. I mean, that's well known. So I don't think you can write off Jacksonville because they went across the country to San Diego. I think that's not quite right. And to say that this wasn't somehow a horrific loss because Green Bay lost, to a good Minnesota team playing their inaugural game at their stadium. Yeah, Packers didn't look good. I'm with you there. But to say that this was somehow a bad loss because this is somehow a crappy, inferior team. Hey, Bradford is new with this team, no doubt about it. But the guy's got some talent and some skill. I mean, he was the number one pick in the draft for a reason. He's had some injuries, but the guy's not like, just some bum. He's better than that. In fact, if you believe what they paid for him, he's actually a pretty good quarterback worth a first and a fourth. So I want to take the foot off the gas a little bit on some of this stuff. Yeah, they did not look good today on offense, but they did look pretty good on defense, and they did it on the road against a good team. Let's try to keep a little perspective.
All right, I'll be patient until enough games pass through for you to come to my side. You could be right, I could be wrong. They could right the ship, they could change, the things they're doing, or they're going to stick with their guns with what they're doing now, and eventually, after four or five losses, midway through the season, you'll come to my side. But and I'll be patient with that. But we should take a break.
Yeah, I think we should, because when we come back, I want to talk about the defense, because we've ripped on the offense. I think we both agreed the offense has got some problems. But there were good things to talk about on defense. And I also want to talk about this punting situation as well, because I think that's an issue that I think hurt them tonight and might hurt them more in the future. Okay, we're going to come back in just a bit. This is the time when we traditionally stop for a moment, refresh ourselves, and also allow our electronics to get recalibrated. It's Chris and Dave on Packers Therapy, back in just moments. Chris and Dave, back with Packers Therapy. Dave, before we get to talking about the other side of the ball, about the defense and special teams, we do want to acknowledge some people that have been very kind and very generous in helping us to raise the money we need to go to a Packer game. So who were the donors this week?
People that gave this week, Brad Elliott, John Piansky, I hope I said your name right, and also John Schweckel, who assisted me in telling me how to pronounce his name. I think he said it rhymes with Freckle, and so John Schweckel, thank you very much. But also I wanted to make sure that we acknowledge Rob Gardner. I'm not sure if we forgot to mention Rob's gift last week or we just didn't mention his message, but Rob gave last week, and I just wanted to make sure that I had acknowledged everyone. And also, if for some reason I have missed you, that is not an intentional slight. That is just a lack of preparation slight, which is a key characteristic of our podcast.
We do not
prepare. This is something you should be, yes, embracing at this point. Feel free to let us know if we've missed you, because we want to acknowledge everyone that has given to our podcast. And the fact that we're going to the game next week. Chris and I will get together. It's going to be a great time. I'm really looking forward to seeing you and going to Lambeau Field. We have good tickets, and I just need to remember to bring them. That would be a tragedy.
Oh, that would be of course, there are a lot of bars in the state of Wisconsin where we can watch the Packer game, too. So that would not be a complete and total disaster. But if people do want to get in on this, by the way, Dave, how do they do that?
And even though we're going to the game, please feel free to continue to, to alleviate your conscience of the guilt that you've been listening to a free podcast for all these years. Feel free to give to our PayPal account at packerstherapy@yahoo.com. We will be giving a special podcast that will only be going to those who give $10 or more. And even though we were going to the game this week, please feel free to contribute going forward, because I don't think we've quite covered my travel expenses. So we'd love to knock that down and have the game be pretty much a low cost. But regardless, we're going. It's going to be fun, I hope. Hope it's not like last year. Although last year was fun, too, with Dr. Klaus. I mean, that was a great memory. But the loss didn't really help that much. And it's a long drive back to St. Louis, so any contribution you can give would be very, very appreciated.
So that's via PayPal, packerstherapy@yahoo.com. Thank you to all the people that have been so wonderful so far. And if you want to get on it, I saw some people on Twitter tonight say they were going to jump on that train too, so we appreciate it. You know who's really good on Twitter? Our buddy C.D. Angeli. He was
active.
Oh man, he was really good on Twitter tonight. I couldn't help but notice he did mention at one time that one of the Viking defenders rode James Starks like a stallion, and that made me uncomfortable. Homoeroticism therein was just not a comfortable image for me. But CD, if you don't follow him on Twitter, he is one of the people that makes Packers Talk possible. Jersey Al is also a part of that cabal that is responsible for all the great podcasts on the Packers Talk website. So check out those guys on Twitter. And thanks to everybody who was tweeting along with Dave and I during the game today. Pastor Kevin was on there, my old buddy Brian from Colorado. We had Brad Elliott was on there, Mark Stratton, Steve. Adam Check, we had a lively back and forth discussion with Adam Check, so thanks for being on that. Richard, who's a regular contributor to Packers Therapy in more ways than one, thank you very much for everybody. I think Dave Moberg also, right? Captain Dave was in on this today.
Yeah, Captain Dave sent a really good frustrated email at the end of the game too. So send emails as well. We definitely like to receive those. And if we had time and a little bit more preparation before the game, I'd have that prepared. I think I forwarded it to you, Chris. But you know, Captain Dave expressed the same frustration that I had this offense. But, that you seem to have much more patience with.
Well, I have patience because it's the second game. You know, it's I don't know if I'll feel, you know, the same way after, say, game six as I do right now. There's no question that the game ended an hour ago. I'm not pleased. I'm frustrated. But if you take even a half a step back, you see it's the second game of the season. You see they're working some new guys in. You know, it's the kind of thing, it's not good, but I can certainly see giving it a little bit of a breather and see how things develop from here. We said it last year, you know, the team that you see in the first month or so of the season is very often not the team you see at the end. Last year it was the reverse. They looked, you know, pretty solid those first 6 weeks going out to 6-0, and then they, you know, they kind of slumped down the stretch. They looked okay against Washington in the playoff game. Actually, not too bad against the Cardinals either. But, you know, there was maybe three different teams that you saw during the course of last season. So to kind of project forward that the next 14 games are going to look as flaccid as the Packers did on offense for most of this Vikings game, I don't think you can do that. A lot can change positively and negatively. You know, to get really too worked up in the middle of September. If you're looking like this in the middle of November, then we have bigger issues to worry about at that point.
Do you think McCarthy survives two seasons of this?
He survives this season regardless. I mean,
yes, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, but
because of the way they're structured,
well,
I don't think Ted Thompson pays attention enough to notice, and I don't think Mark Murphy has the balls to do it. So I think there's at least one season left out of McCarthy, but I think two. I think that's where it gets really interesting. Do you think he's got two?
Oh yeah, I think what wouldn't surprise me actually, and we'll get to the defense here in a second, but what really wouldn't surprise me if Ted doesn't hang it up at the end of this season, and if that's the case, and Elliott Wolf becomes the general manager, he's not going to make a coaching change immediately. But I think at that point, McCarthy's expiration date, I think, becomes a lot more clear, because a new general manager, even though he's worked forever, you know, with McCarthy, a new general manager may want, you know, his own guy, want a new direction, has just a different way that he wants to go. But I think as long as Ted is around, I just don't see Ted making a move on McCarthy as long as he keeps, you know, getting him in the playoffs and winning divisions and even if being just one and done in the playoffs. I think that he is going to be just fine as long as Ted's around. But, you know, they've already kind of anointed Elliott Wolf. I don't know how long they're going to just have him be the GM in waiting. So it could be after this season, and if that's the case, I think McCarthy becomes a lot more a year-to-year guy under a new general manager, whether that be Elliott Wolf or somebody else.
Was there any point tonight that you saw a stamp of Mike McCarthy that you felt like, good call, Mike, or like, that's a good adjustment? Or, I mean, was there any point where you felt that coaching popped in your head that was – important, or it just came to your mind? Do you understand my question?
I mean, yeah, I think I do. This is going to sound kind of strange, but the fact that they recovered three of the four fumbles is
that's good coaching.
You know, I understand having, you know, read. In fact, I think it was even on Twitter tonight. They spend a lot of time on the fumble drill for exactly that reason. Now, I don't know if practicing recovering fumbles shows up in a game. I have no idea if it was just luck or it's cause and effect. But one of the writers, and I forget, you know, which guy it was, I follow a dozen different Packer reporters, you know, was saying exactly that about how much time they spend just doing that. And I've read this in the past. I've heard Jason Wilde talk about it. You know, it's attention to those kinds of details that I think is a mark of good coaching. And the fact that they recovered 3 of 4, which means they had a lot of awareness and alertness, and they're doing something right. Now, that was important. The one that they didn't recover, you know, was bad, but they were able to somehow get the ball back 3 out of 4 times. I think that's a good mark of it. You know, they're not usually, anyway, most seasons, not terribly penalized. I think that, you know, comes a lot to coaching. They don't turn the ball over a lot. You know, tonight they had, what, two? They had the one fumble and they had the interception, which, by the way, as long as we're piling on Rodgers here, I thought that ball was underthrown. I don't think that was on Davante Adams at all. I didn't think that he really was in a position where he could wrestle that one away. So generally speaking, a team that doesn't commit a lot of penalties, that doesn't turn it over a lot, I mean, those are signs to me of good coaching, because they're about attention to detail that usually comes in to be important. You know, they don't do a lot of dumb stuff. I know they got a unsportsmanlike conduct penalty today. I didn't think that was justified.
I did not either.
But generally speaking, they don't get a lot of those. You don't see them doing a lot of dumb stuff, at least since Johnny Jolly's been gone.
Yeah. And, you know, I watched Los Angeles Rams today. I watch other teams, and they do dumb stuff. You know, they do stuff like, oh, my gosh. And you're right. I think the Packers generally have filled their roster with guys that are intelligent to the most part. I mean, I just thinking of through the list. Although I read an article about Guyon this week, wasn't very flattering toward him. But generally, they have pretty intelligent, you know, heady guys.
He's such an aberration. He's not a Packer people kind of guy. I guess everyone likes him, but he does dumb stuff.
I guess so. I was surprised to read that, all the stuff that's followed him, that he sort of dumbed his way out of Minnesota, and we picked him up. That's a very un-Green Bay Packer thing to do, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. They are intelligent, but I didn't feel like there was anything tonight that I thought, wow, that's a good adjustment, or boy, that drive, they figured out X. You know, the tight end is important, or they figured out to run to the left side or the right side. You know, it just felt like more the same, more the same, more the same, more the same. Not successful, not successful, not successful. I just feel like McCarthy is. He's calling in plays. You know, the announcers talk about what a great play caller he is. It's McCarthy against the Minnesota coach, and this is a great matchup. But I saw nothing that I mean, obviously when nothing works, it doesn't sound intelligent. But, I mean, there was nothing where it's like, well, that's a good play. It's too bad it didn't work out. Or that was creative, but it just felt like more of the same all the time. Run the ball, drop back, dance around, and throw the ball into traffic. It's just there's no variation on the whole night. But.
Well, I'm not really sure that, you know, that's his design. I mean, I think the plays are designed in one way, and Rodgers executes them in another. For instance, the whole middle of the field situation. You know, when Rodgers started looking to the middle of the field, they tended to move the ball and do a little bit better. When they were trying to go outside the hash marks, they had more difficulty. I don't know enough to say whether that is a coaching prerogative or is that what the quarterback is seeing and prefers to do when he's on the field. I mean, all the scrambling around that Rodgers does, is it because the plays aren't there or he doesn't like the way the angle is? It doesn't feel comfortable like he can fit it in there. If he's looking for guys like Jordy on the outside and is not looking for guys in the middle of the field, it's very difficult to know. I think even if you look at the All-22, I'm not sure if you can make judgments about what is the scheme, what is the coaching, and what's the quarterback decide to do in the moment. It's hard to know it's hard to know where one stops and the other begins.
Well, if the quarterback is being defiant and not doing what you want him to do, then part of coaching is to call him on the carpet, to make it happen, to sit him down. I mean, whatever you got to do to make it work. I mean, if he is completely defying you, I mean, I felt there was a Favre element of that too.
Sure.
Where you wanted him to keep it under control, and then he's throwing interceptions, you know, he's throwing out for grabs all the time. Well, then I think they were really forcefully trying to keep him under control. And that's a coaching thing. I mean, you got to do that. We've all coached. I mean, we have players that don't listen, and you've got to do something. You can't shrug your shoulders at it. So if you think one of the elements is Rodgers is not going with the game plan or he's not executing what they want to have happen, then good coaching figures out how to make that stop.
I'm not sure it's that simple. I mean, you manage people, and I do too. You know that you manage your high performers better than you do the rank and file. I mean, that's just
sure. Except
that's just
when there's failure. When there's failure, then you address it. It doesn't matter how high up you are. If you're failing consistently, you've got to address it. You can't shrug your shoulders at it.
Yeah, but this is where it gets gray. I mean, what's consistent failure? Is consistent failure, you know, the last few games, or is it over the body of a person's professional life? You know?
Well, it's getting to that point, though, right? I mean, last year was we don't have Jordy. We had injuries on the line. But now I think tonight you've got to really – you know, McCarthy says goodbye to Rodgers and he sits down with his coaches. I think they have to look around and say, this is a problem. This has now gone from a 1 year now to a second year, and we can't let this go on. And I think it's going to be very important for him to make tough decisions or – I mean, I'm assuming if this is if Rodgers is not following the game plan, and we don't know if that's true or not.
No, I think we're at a disadvantage there. You really don't know. I mean, he might be doing exactly what he's supposed to be doing.
Right. That's right. It might be Rodgers is frustrated because he's doing dumb McCarthy things. But I think McCarthy after tonight is sitting down with his coaches and having a heart to heart and saying, "What's going on?" I mean, we've got whatever we're doing is not working, and we can't let this go on to week three, week four, week five, or the season's going to be lost, and we're going to be in trouble. 2 years, and we're going to be in the hot seat. We're going to be in the papers. People are already taking shots at us, and we've won a Super Bowl, but it's been 6 years now. And, you know, I didn't win this someplace else. I came to Green Bay, and I won with a very good quarterback, and now – we've been losing, you know, we haven't won a Super Bowl since. And so I think they've got to start feeling the pressure of this season. I think it starts today. I think they're going to – I'd be very disappointed if they just go back to Green Bay and say, all right, let's just do the same thing and execute. I think they're going to start to feel the pressure now.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I really do think it's early in the season to panic, and I really do believe that – this is part of the hangover from not playing their guys in the preseason. And I know a lot of people like that. To me, I know why they do it. It's maybe smart, but it's almost like they're playing afraid. Okay, fine. Then you're not going to play those guys. But you have to understand there's going to be a break-in period. You know, when they're not used to playing, one thing, it's probably just stamina, just, you know, physically being able to go out there and play 60 minutes when all you've done is practice and you have a couple series and a couple of games, you know, playing an entire game. I don't care if you're, you know, 30 years old and in really good shape or 28 years old in good shape, still getting yourself back into game shape by itself to having the physical conditioning. I mean, that's a whole part of this deal. And I'm not entirely surprised that, especially against a good defense, that the offense would struggle. Now on the defensive side, they looked very solid. I thought Mike Daniels was really good tonight.
Yeah,
and
so early
before he got hurt, I mean, Guillaume, I thought was he didn't look like he was high tonight, so that was good.
Yeah, I thought the linebackers played
Joe Thomas.
Well,
yeah, I mean,
Joe Thomas
showed up. Yeah,
I thought Jake Ryan, Joe Thomas, and Martinez. I thought they all played very, very strong. I mean, this defense is good enough to take us deep into the playoffs if the offense is where it should be.
Right, exactly. I mean,
and I'm talking about, you know, if they score 28 points, we win comfortably tonight. In fact, if we score 28 points, I think Minnesota doesn't score 17 because now they're passing the whole time, and we go from 4 sacks to 10, you know, not 10 sacks, 7 sacks because, you know, we can pin our ears back and go after the quarterback. But because we constantly are stopping them, but three and out now, and plus on our punts, which you want to talk about, you know, this average of, what was his average? Shum averaged, my gosh, his net average, I guess, 38.6 yards.
Yeah.
So if you're going to go three and out and you punt an average of 38 yards, you're asking your defense to do a whole lot.
That is just, I mean, as well as they played. And Matthews, I thought, played well. He went out with an injury.
He did.
But he came back, and he played well. You know, even Julius Peppers showed up, you know, with Nick Perry on a sack. I mean, there was a lot of people that contributed. Now, I know folks are going to say, well, what about Randall? And Randall did not have a great game. It seems like, and not just this season. I've seen it. I saw it last year, too. This 14 digs for the Vikings. Good player. Not as good as they made him look today. But as well as Randall played last week, he played the flip side of that, you know, bad today. It was not a good day in the secondary. And you wonder, how much does Sam Shields really matter? I mean, Shields now has had his fifth concussion. You begin to worry about whether or not, you know, he's going to be okay for the rest of his life. And even if it's smart to have him continue playing, I mean, just for his own sake. But if he does come back, is he going to be prone to concussions going forward, which is bad for his health and bad for the Packers? Can he even count on that guy? And if you can't count on him, if he's going to miss another month like he did last time he had a concussion, this is what you got. I mean, you've got Randall, you got Rollins, you know, you have Hawkins who's injured. You know, your cornerback's a little bit thin. Hyde was injured today too. I don't know if he came back or not into the game, but he was out for a time. You know, the secondary, not the safety so much, but the corners, they might have a little bit of a problem brewing there, and it showed up tonight the way Diggs with, what was it, 180-some yards he had in receiving. You know, as good as the front seven played today in shutting down Peterson, I thought that was just terrific. They did not have a good day in the secondary.
Not a great day, but overall the defense let Minnesota score 17 points. And so, yeah, Stephon Diggs had 182 yards, 9 catches, only 20 didn't catch.
Wow.
20 yards a catch. You know, they threw it to him 11 times and he caught 9 of them. But you pull in the whole body of work. I mean, you don't know how many times Demarius Randall covered his guy, right, which allowed a sack. So it's, you know, if you just pick on him in the times that he allowed a reception, some of those receptions to Randolph and Diggs, those were really good throws.
Right, yeah, excellent throws.
And that's going to happen. I mean, defense, you can't stop it every time on defense. But when you look at the whole thing and they scored 17 points, you feel like that's a win for the defense, especially when we consistently three and out and punt. I think the defense played certainly good enough to win. I'm not going to pin this on Demarius Randall as, you know, he sucked, even though the pass interference at the end, that was the final nail in the coffin. And, you know, how smart was it Minnesota was able to manage the clock to the point where they didn't give it back to the Packers? How many times do you see a team end up just punting the ball, even 3 seconds left? I thought Minnesota played that out where the Packers had no chance, and so I thought they played the end of the game right. But,
I thought so.
You know, the Randall interference, it's a shame. I guess it's only fitting because that's what the whole game was defined by, was all the pass interferences that was there. And you can argue that if the Packers didn't have pass interference, I don't know if they'd have scored 14 points. They certainly wouldn't have scored 7. They needed the referees to help them out to get to at least 7 of their points. So I think the defense played well. This is an offense problem. Punts aside, this is an offense problem, and they've got to fix it.
Well, I want to mention about the punting game because it was a surprise when they let go of the ginger Wolverine, as it were, with Tim Mastay being cut. Now, Mastay had his problems. There's no doubt about that. But, you know, he did set the Packer record for, you know, net yardage last season. Shum comes in, and he kicks well in the preseason. But he, you know, down the stretch last week, last punt, when they needed him to deliver, you know, he has a poor, 32-yard kick. And that kind of put Jacksonville, gave him a chance, put him in position on a short field to win the game. Well, they wind up, you know, winning anyway. I think Randall had a role in that, as I recall, in the win last week. So today, you know, he has 2 short punts. Again, when they really need him to uncork one, you know, when they're inside their 20, and it goes, I think both times it was just over the 50, maybe the 47, 45-yard line, something like that. And again, giving the other team a short field. You know, when they need to reverse that field position, he's not been able to do it. Well, that wasn't the reason why they lost today, but those are the kinds of things in a close game on the road against a defense that's very good. You need everything working. And you need things like they got with Montgomery breaking through the line and blocking that punt.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that was absolutely great. They haven't done that in forever.
That turned the game around.
I thought that was really great. And they scored off of that, as I recall.
That's right. That's how they got their first touchdown.
So, you know, those are the kind of things you need on special teams. You don't need a guy like, you know, Shum coming up small. So today that wasn't the reason why they lost. But will it be next time? I'm not exactly sure. He was cut by Tampa Bay for a reason. I know there's a lot of people who were dissatisfied with Tim Mastey, but the guy they picked up, somebody else didn't like him. I mean, I know sometimes another man's trash and another man's treasure, but I am not 100% convinced that Shum is necessarily a big upgrade, although I will admit he's a very handsome man on his YouTube video, you know, kitchen shirtless. You know, he looked glistening kind of in the sun, the sweat. Yeah, it was quite an impressive sight, actually. But
all I know is the first punt we had, he punted 38 yards net.
Oof.
Then we scored a touchdown. The second punt he had was 42.
Which is okay. That's okay.
Third punt was 35.
Mm.
And then the fourth punt was 34. Mm. So that got us to
That's painful.
That is. You almost feel like you could almost go for it if you know you're gonna punt for 30 some yards. What's the point? And there's a kid in Green Bay who's got Clay Matthews on a poster on his wall that is available, and maybe we'll see him again. I don't know if anyone picked up Mastey or not.
I have not heard that he has been, but there's always a pile of those guys available, and you know, Mastey is probably waiting for someone to get hurt. I mean, actually, the Vikings kicker could have really been hurt today after the blocked punt.
That's right.
Montgomery hit him with his leg fully extended, and it's a wonder that that guy wasn't injured.
I agree.
Yeah. So that sort of covers both sides of the ball. I think we agree that offense got problems. The defense played certainly well enough to win. In fact, I thought the defense played impressive. If they can get this kind of performance out of them all season, I think the Packers are going to be just fine, especially if they start, you know, figuring out what it is that they need to do on offense. So, you know, I mean, that was, I guess, in terms of the Packers therapy, part of it. People can take away it was a good defensive performance, and this has got the makings. Maybe it's going to be the best defense they had since the Super Bowl team. It's kind of got, you know, inklings of that right now. You never know what the rest of the season is going to bring and how injuries are going to play into this. But at this point, it looks like it's going to be the best they've had in 5 or 6 years.
Well, I'd love to see this defense play with a 2-score lead, you know, to where the other team's got to throw and let them blitz, let them rush, you know, with Peppers and Matthews. I mean, I was impressed with how Peppers played tonight, but it's not just, you know, Peppers, Matthews, but you know, there are a number of guys. I think Dayton Jones, Nick Perry.
Yeah.
I mean, they're Mike Daniels had a good.
He had a sack,
I mean,
guys. Right? Yeah.
These guys are making plays and putting pressure on the quarterback, and that's what, you know, they've got to respect the run. So we get to a 2-score lead. I think this defense could be something else, but the offense has to hold their up their end of the donkey, for guys.
Well, you know, on defense, they seem to be a lot quicker at the certainly at the inside spots, and so those plays that go to the outside, they're able to get a lot of pursuit. You know, from Martinez, from Thomas,
Ryan,
Jake Ryan, I thought played well. In fact, he looks a little just physically, he looks a little bit different than he did last year. He looks like he's a little more put together than he was. So those guys, people were so concerned, oh my God, you know, what are they going to do? Everyone's concerned about Lane Taylor. Well, you know, Lane Taylor's held up okay. People concerned about the inside linebackers? Well, you know, they've held up pretty well. What people, you know.
It's your quarterback.
I mean, it's the guy that people really weren't concerned about that maybe now I think there's going to be a lot of attention focused this week in the reporting and the stories that comes out of Green Bay. I think Aaron Rodgers is going to find himself under the microscope a little bit, and I don't know that that's not unjustified.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is going to be an interesting week to listen to podcasts and watch the writers. I think Rodgers is in for a rough week this week. Mm-hmm. It'll be interesting to see if he is able to channel that, put that chip back on his shoulder and improve, or is he now the Olivia Munn?
There you go.
I attend
there
the Oscars.
There you go. Olivia Munn. It's a matter of time until Olivia Munn was playing.
I'm not blaming her for his lack of production. I'm just saying that if his mindset is, I'm Aaron Rodgers, for crying out loud, why are they criticizing me? And it becomes, the criticism becomes a negative rather than something that motivates you. His career has changed, too. He's no longer the underdog. He is now the favorite, and he's playing from the lead, and that's different sometimes.
It is very different when you're a two-time MVP, Super Bowl champion, people talking about you as a Hall of Famer, and, you know, you're – I don't know if he's engaged to Olivia Munn, but he's very serious with her, and she has a lifestyle that is – different than what he was raised in and what most of us understand. How does that affect a person? I don't know. Maybe it doesn't affect you at all. But that's, you know, his life is certainly different now than it was
when he started.
When he won the Super Bowl after the 2010 season. His life now is dramatically different than it was. And none of us stay the same. It's a dynamic existence for all of us. And how do you change with your changing circumstances? I mean, I know that he takes really good care of his body. But on the other hand, I think it's human nature to say, you know, I was willing to kind of, you know, do certain things, stay in the pocket longer, sell out, you know, before. You know, but now that I've kind of reached this, I don't know that I want to, you know, take that hit. My personal values as a 32-year-old or almost 32-year-old might be different than when I was 26 or 27, and I was hungry. I was still trying to prove it. Can you have the chip on your shoulder because you weren't recruited by Division I? Can you keep that chip on your shoulder after you have been recruited by Division I? You were a first-round draft choice, even though you weren't the number one pick in the draft, that you've succeeded a legend and you have, you know, filled in those shoes by winning a Super Bowl, winning the MVP twice. Can you still keep that hunger? And I think that's a tall task for anybody. I don't care how focused you are or how competitive you are. You're still a human being, and you're never the same guy that you were back when you were that hungry 21- or 22-year-old guy.
Yeah, that's right. There's only so many Michael Jordans out there who, after success, want to win consistently again and again and again. I think there is a, call it regression to the mean, or what, you know, or just a settling in of success.
Settling in, yeah.
That you just you don't have the same desire as you once did, or just I don't know if it's motivation or if it's the willingness to take risks or whatever it is. It could be ever so slightly in the NFL that you lose it, and it just may be a couple ticks, but whatever it is, it just is. It goes from winning to losing, you know, that quickly.
I was arguing with somebody on Twitter tonight. Obviously, somebody who's a big, you know, Brett Favre honk, you know. And, of course, they remember how exciting Favre was, and other people remember that as him throwing a lot of interceptions and all that stuff.
Right.
But, you know, I was thinking about Brett then, and you remember when Brett Favre owned the winter? I mean, those games in Lambeau Field where when he just shined when it was cold and it was crappy.
Oh, yeah.
And it seemed like the worse the conditions, the kid from Mississippi played well. But by the end of his career, he looked pathetic in the cold weather at Chicago or that NFC Championship game against New York. He looked tired and old and like he wanted to be any place but where he was. And I don't think it was because he didn't want to win anymore. You know, he was older. You know, the world had changed. He had changed, and we all change as we get older. I know we've talked off air about what game we're going to be going to, and I told you I didn't want to go to a December game. I used to go to them all the time with our guy Mike and Ash Wabadon. We went every year to a December game, and we did that for many years. But I don't want to do that anymore, you know. And Brett Favre, I don't think Brett Favre wanted to go to any December games in Lambeau Field toward the end of his career. I mean, people change, and I don't know that Aaron Rodgers has changed. I'm just asking the question because it seems to be human nature that the way you once were, you know, when you were one age, it doesn't necessarily mean you're always going to be that way, burn with the same flame, you know, be willing to do the things that you once did, even though you still enjoy doing them.
I agree. We're all there.
Well, so let's go to the betting lines, and while you scramble and get the betting lines out, I'm going to do a few more acknowledgments because there was a ton of people on Twitter. Acme Packing Company had a lively exchange this evening. Michael Brickman, Jeremy Vanderlinden, Alex Talish, Joe Meek, who really, really wanted us to make sure that we were able to reference along the line John Locke, because that was the name of the punter for Minnesota was Locke. So he was hoping that we would mention Locke's second treatise on government, and I promised that we would. I don't think that the Vikings punter of the same name was involved with that second treatise on government, but he probably should have been. Also, Brandon, is it Nutzvig, I believe it was? Brandon was in touch with us tonight, so and John P., also in touch. So everyone that, you know, played along with us on Twitter tonight, thanks so much. It was a pleasure. I usually don't get a chance to do that in real time, so it was fun corresponding back and forth with people. It's a fun way to do the game, but it makes it fly back fly by almost too quickly, because between tweeting and watching the game, there's just nonstop. I felt exhausted by the time the game was done.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, have I stalled long enough?
Yeah, you have. I'm ready.
All right.
I'm ready to go. Okay, so betting lines.
Right.
Number one, we had Adrian Peterson rushing yards. You set the line at 126, and he had a full 19.
Ooh,
yes.
I think I missed on that one.
I got the under. I said the under. That was correct. Number two, how many Green Bay forced turnovers? You set the line at 1.5. And interesting enough, I'm counting it as there was one turnover that they forced, which was the Randall Cobb grabbing back the fumble recovery early in the game, which could have been the play of the game had the Packers won. But still the under one. I said the over on that one. I was still had lots of optimism for the Packers back then. Jerry Cook catches was number three. You set the line at 3.5. I have him at 4.
Ooh,
so they are
well
taking their time. I said the under, so I didn't get that one right, but they were gradually getting Jerry Cook back into the offense. Jordy Nelson receiving yards. You set the line at 57, and he had 73. And we had a side bet that I thought he would have at least 35 yards in a single play. His longest was
39. Yeah.
So I did. I got that one right.
So
I got
that was
over.
I was pretty close. Other than the Peterson thing, I think I was pretty close on these.
Yeah, you were pretty good, but I got that right. I thought there would be a 35 plus, and there was. We had the Sean Hill quarterback rating, which I guess effectively he was a 0 rating. So, but let's just say Minnesota quarterback rating. You set the line at 78, and Bradford was 121.2.
Yeah. I see. Even if I knew Bradford was going to play, I wouldn't have set the line.
121.2.
Yeah, I would have probably set it, you know, 85 or something. But yeah, he was far better than I thought he would be with what, 2 weeks under his belt.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he is this generation's Herschel Walker, where the Packers make him look good in his first game, and then he's going to get hurt or not play as well, I think, in the future. So I don't think Minnesota is on their way by any stretch. They got lucky that the Packers are still in disarray. Number six, Lacy's rushing yards. You set the line at 78, and it was 50 yards. I took the under. I got that one correct. I asked if they would have a graphic where they'd show Rodgers and Favre on the same one, and they showed Rodgers a number of times, and they talked about Favre a couple times, but they never showed the graphic.
Yep.
So I said yes. You said yes, I think, too.
Mm-hmm.
No is the correct answer. I did not see that. And then tiebreaker was the total score. You set the line at 41, and it was 31, not nearly as high scoring as you thought. Now, Mike, who is on the ball. He did send us a spreadsheet as we were starting this.
Mitno Miller is outstanding. That guy rocks.
He is. Other than his 69-cent PayPal gift.
What is – yeah, two of them. I mean, is he trying to make some kind of statement about us?
Is that the worth of each show? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about the homoeroticism. I mean, Mitno, come on, fella.
Well, congratulations to Ryan Boyd, who got all seven correct.
Oh, my gosh.
He is the winner this week. Mike said he found our offense to be offensive, and we hope we do better at home, which is a fair thing to say. I agree. So that is this week's picks. You want next week's picks? Are you
ready? Let's roll with next week's betting line. And, of course, winners of the over and under gambling lines do get a chance to stay in the presidential suite at the Packers Therapy Hotel and Casino, 24-hour room service. If we have more than one winner, we wheel in the bunk beds, and you get to hang out for a week with a total stranger. So
yeah,
what have you got there, Dave?
All right, so in this week against Detroit.
Yep.
Number one. How many turnovers do you think the Packers will get?
They will force.
Get means force.
Yeah. Okay.
I think the defense is playing well. I'm curious how many fumbles and interceptions you think they'll have against Detroit.
So what do they have today? No interceptions, right? And one fumble recovery?
Well, yeah.
I mean, of a sort.
From the offense. Yeah.
Detroit, huh? And playing at home. Okay, I'm going to set the line for turnovers at 1.5.
All right. I'm going to take the over
on
that one. Number two, given Aaron Rodgers' quarterback rating was a lofty 70.7.
And he has not had above 100 for at least the last 11 weeks. He's not had a 300-yard game for 11 weeks.
So they're coming home.
Yep.
They have a week to figure this out. What do you think his quarterback rating will be?
I want to say he was 92 against Jacksonville, something like that, or 95. He was respectable. I think it'll be respectable again, but I don't think there's going to be like flip a switch, and this is going to be Aaron Rodgers circa 2014. So I'm going to put his passer rating. I'm going to go in the low 90s again. I'm going to go 91.5.
91.5. I'm taking it under.
Okay.
I'm flipping. I'm going to assume until he proves me otherwise, he's staying in low quarterback rating.
Okay.
Also, a defensive stat: how many sacks do you think Green Bay will have? Given they had, let me just look here. They had 4 sacks tonight, but a lot of pressure. So
a lot of pressure.
I thought if they get the lead, I think they get a lot of sacks. How many sacks they'll get next week?
No, I was just trying to get to the weather forecast to see what it was going to be. But I think we can assume it's probably going to be it's still early fall, so weather should be good. So there should be a fairly fast track. I'm going to set it at 4.5.
Oh, that's high.
It is high.
You're high. I'm going to go with the under on that.
Well, I think they could do it on the road 4, and I think they could have had more actually. And I don't think Detroit is as good as the Vikings. I'm gonna stick with the 4.5.
All right, I'm gonna take the under. One thing I thought that was concerning because of all the nonsense they're doing with Cobb and Starks in the backfield was the number of attempts rushing that Eddie Lacy had. He had 12 carries today.
Yeah.
How many attempts do you think he'll have next week?
Yeah, I'm not sure about his health or conditioning. There was a reason why they took him out for as long as they did. And I think they want to give him 20, but I don't think he's ready to get 20. So today he had 12. I think he'll have more than that. I will set it at 14.5.
All right. I'm taking the over. I think when they lose, they end up going back to the running game or establishing the running game, and that's something we got away from. So I think they're going to do more than to him. I think they, being at home and if they're playing well, I think they can be more of a running team. Number 5, how many tight end catches do you think will happen next week? I think this is another thing if they are honest with themselves, this is something they need to exploit more. Jared Cook had 4, Rodgers had 2, they had 6 this week. What do you think tight end catches next week?
Yeah, I think they really want the tight ends to be more involved in the offense, and I think they're going to look at the film and say, damn it, we got to exploit the middle of the field. So they had six this week, and I don't think they really went to it as much as they could have. So let me put that at seven and a half.
Ooh, that's a good line. It's a good line. I'm going to take the under.
All right.
I don't think they learned their lesson yet.
Okay.
So I think one of the things they'll also figure out is that Aaron Rodgers needs to rush to run the ball more. If defenses are clearing out and he's got a wide open field, he's going to run more. So how many rushing attempts do you think Aaron Rodgers will have next week?
Now, did he have three today? Is that what he had?
He had three, correct.
And one of them was a long one for a touchdown. And he's had two running touchdowns now in 2 weeks. So I think that his running is oftentimes a result of, again,
him, broken plays.
Right, of him not liking what he sees downfield. And, of course, in their man coverage, they're running with their backs to him, et cetera, et cetera. Three is a good number. I think I'm going to put that at 3.5.
All right, I'm taking it over.
Oh, okay.
I think that's going to happen. I think it's going to happen. I think he's going to do it a lot. Davante Adams.
Mm.
He is an enigma in my mind. How many targets do you think Adams will get? I was super surprised in this game how often they go to Adams early, and especially on third down and deep, that they put a lot of trust in this guy. And I thought, boy, they just really like him a lot more than I think they do.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that on Twitter. I don't get it. They must see something in practice that they really like. I mean, on the one ball that was almost picked off in the end zone, I mean, Aaron was staring him down. I mean, he really wanted to go to 17. And I don't get it because all I see are the games. There must be something else going on there. So how many targets did he have today? I don't have it in front of me.
Seven.
He had seven today targets. That sounds about right. I mean, the last game we saw, didn't he have like 21 or something? They're just forcing the ball to him. I don't think he'll have 21. Seven's a good number. I'm going to put that at 7.5.
All right. I'm going to take the under. I think they're going to get Aberderis more in the game. Aberderis
didn't
play.
He didn't play much today, did he?
No attempts to him.
Yeah.
Trevor Davis had a target. I don't remember what that was, but they threw at him once.
Yeah.
They threw at Eddie Lacy once. So I think they're going to go under. I think they're going to try to – boy, I think they should de-emphasize Adams. As the tiebreaker, what do you think the total score will be?
Okay. Packers at home. I don't think that's necessarily a tonic for the offense. I can't imagine that they're going to struggle the way they did against Minnesota. Likewise, the Packer defense at home, I like to think they're going to be pretty stingy. So I think it's going to be a fairly low-scoring game. I think I did 41, right, for this past game.
You did.
I could actually see this being the same thing. So I'm going to go with 41 again. But last time I think I thought it was going to be Vikings 24, Packers 17. I'm going to flip that this time around and say Packers 24, Lions 17, and go with 41 as the number.
All right. I'm going to take the under. I think until they can prove it, I think it's going to be a defensive game on both sides. Our offense sucks and our defense is good.
Well,
so
I know that you're bound to be defensive. I'm preparing myself for that.
I am. Exactly. I'm super defensive.
Exactly.
So that's your betting lines.
All right.
Michael, thanks. Thanks for getting it over to us.
If I would like to participate in the betting lines, which I have yet to do, how would I do that, Dave?
You need to send an email to mitnomiller@gmail.com. So that's mitnomiller@gmail.com. And Mike will pull it together. Thank goodness that he's willing to do that. And I actually do have the people that participate this week. Along with Mike and myself, Ryan Boyd, who won again, Jeff Tum, Jared Stevenson, Greg Carson, Brian Thompson, Richard Duren.
Oh, yes. Yes, he's a frequent Twitterer at us.
I just don't know how to say his last name. Kevin Becker, Tom Freeman, Judy Freeman, Ben Zelmer, Jerry Van Cleve, Tom Elmer, and Rich Holmes.
Oh, my gosh.
Some people have come back to participate in the betting lines, which is great. And that's your betting lines for this week.
I don't think Christ had that many apostles. I mean, that's a lot of people that were involved there. That's incredible.
Yeah, that's something.
Well, it's good to see the Freemans, you know, in Tom's retirement. They're living there by San Luis Obispo and gathering around, you know, the old iPhone to listen podcast and then playing along, you know, the betting. That's kind of nice.
That's excellent. Yeah. Oh, good deal.
So, we do a little pop culture before we get out of here?
We do, but I'm not really super prepared. I guess one thing that I'm working on right now is I'm reading a book called Thinking Fast and Slow.
Oh.
Have you heard of this book?
I have heard of the book. Why don't you tell me more about it?
So this is a book that describes a little bit about how the brain works. And I've been doing a lot of these books this last year. 2016 has been all about kind of reading books that I should be reading or kind of improving my brain as opposed to just, novels, fiction, or Packer stuff. So I've read a bunch of things like Anti-Fragile. There's one, Triggers was another. There's a bunch of other that's just sort of how the brain works. And this one is probably the toughest read for me so far. Chris, let me just step back for a second and explain the point of this book. This book will talk about that you have two sides of your brain. You have a system one and a system two. Your system two side of your brain is the brain that will jump in that says, if I ask you, what's 48 times 48? You have to sit down and calculate
it. I'm going to have to calculate it, right.
Yeah, or you have to really engage your brain, right, and think about it. System one is the thing that just reacts. It just, there's all kinds of things that happen in system one. It's the one that your brain is most engaged in. It's where you make the most mistakes. But that is also what we engage with the most when someone asks us a question or we engage in life. Our system one usually is what leads, and we have to force ourselves to kind of kick in system two. For example, if I were to, and I did this week, which is really interesting, I asked two people this question, and it goes into one of the terms is called anchoring, that when you hear a number, you will anchor your response based on the number you just heard. So I asked a group of people who I was in a meeting, I said, how old do you think Gandhi was when he died? Do you think he was older or younger than 114 years old? Well, how would you answer that, Chris?
I would say he was younger.
And what age was he when he died?
I'm going to say Gandhi was he was 71.
Okay. Well, that probably was influenced by the fact I was leading you into that question. But so I asked two people about that question. They said younger, and one person said 84, and one person said 92. Then other people came in the room, and I asked them the same question. I said, how old do you think Gandhi was when he died? You think he was older or younger than 33? And they said, well, he was older. And I said, how old do you think he was? And the average age was 48.
Oh, my. Okay.
And so I told them, so here this worked. You heard the number I asked you, and you got anchored by the number I told you. And they both all said, the one who shot too high and the one who shot too low said, if I had thought about it, I would have guessed in the 70s because I think he was 70-something. But they weren't thinking. They just said the number popped in their head, and that's what system one is.
Huh.
So some really interesting things about the really interesting stuff with the book, things about regression to the mean. This is something that relates to sports. So you could say if Adrian Peterson had a bad game in week one, actually this doesn't really apply because he had a bad game week two, but you would say if he had a good game week two, you would naturally say in your mind, well, he had a good game because he had a bad game week one. He worked extra hard, and he had a chip on his shoulder, and he came out and had a better week two. But really, it's just a regression to the mean. If you have a bad week one, you're just going to naturally have a better week two just because your average will be a certain number, and you'll naturally gravitate to that average. So just because someone has a bad week one, you should automatically assume they're going to have a better week two. Or if they have a great week one, they're probably going to have a less week two just because of this regression to the mean. But our minds want to fill in stories or want to say it's because of other things when really it's more of a regression to the mean. It's an interesting book. It explains a lot of interesting things. It kind of explains how you can manipulate people a little bit if you know how their brain works. I'm about halfway through, and if you're into that sort of thing, it's a very interesting book. I don't have the author in front of me, but it's called Thinking Fast and Slow.
All right. Well, I'm tempted to say, yeah, cool story, bro. But actually it was very cool. And, I think that's, people have the time and the desire after a long day to get into that. It sounds like it's really fascinating. What I will say is I did look up, the age of Mahatma Gandhi, and he was born in 1869. I would have guessed more like, 1880, and he died in 1948. So what does that give us? 70 years old? 31 and 48 would be 79, right? Yeah. 79 years old. Yeah. So I was too low. Yeah. Well, of course, was also assassinated. So it wasn't like he died of natural causes, unless lead poisoning would be a part of that. But yeah.
But you were an aberration. I gave you a high number, and you actually shot too low. But I think you might have been influenced by the fact that I already told you what anchoring was, because these were people I asked that were reasonable people. One person knew a lot about Gandhi and said 48 without even thinking. They just weren't thinking.
Well,
they just
he died in 48, so if he knew a lot about him, he may have been thinking that too.
Oh, well, maybe.
But no, I don't know if it was anchoring. I think it's just because I know stuff. I think that's
Your brain is obviously
superior.
So far advanced,
exactly.
Yes. You don't have System 1, System 2. You're just
That's for losers. I have the best brain. I'm trying to make Packers therapy great again.
Yeah, you go for it, man.
Okay, my only pop culture contribution is an off-season show that I watch called The Fall. It's a BBC program, a crime drama filmed and set in Northern Ireland. And if you like, kind of psychological thriller drama type things, and especially those with a British accent, recommend it. It stars, of all people, Gillian Anderson. Now, she was an
X-Files.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize. I think she's an American who lives in the UK. So hearing her talk with a British accent was like, oh, okay. Didn't realize that. But I thought it's a really good show. It's the British have a little bit different spin, than we do on some of the police stuff. And I found it to be very worthwhile. They do the series a little bit differently than we do. They have, instead of have season one, season two, season three, they have season one, two, three. And I watched a couple series of that. Quite good. I do recommend it. You probably aren't going to get as much from that as you would from the book that Dave offered. But if you're looking for some entertainment and you want to get out the iPad at night and watch something that is engaging without being too demanding, I would definitely recommend The Fall. And that's available, I believe, on Netflix, and it's a BBC show. So check that one out.
I will say, and I tweeted this tonight, that everything that NBC threw up there as a show that's on this fall looks like garbage to me.
Yeah.
Who is watching any of these shows, and why don't people just default to Netflix, HBO, and Amazon? Or actually, I should ask, how are their writers able to get their junk through major television when there are writers that do such good work on HBO and Netflix?
Let's not talk about the writers' junk, Dave. I don't think that's an appropriate topic of conversation.
Fair enough. I apologize.
But this is the thing. Okay, now, I don't know if this is a defense of NBC. I guess you could construe it as a backwards sort of nod. But this is our situation at our house. We watch, a lot of these so-called, prestige TV shows, the ones that everybody knows, the HBO shows, the Showtime stuff, the stuff you get off of Netflix, like we just finished the second season of Bloodline. We watch most of that stuff, and we've talked about them on the podcast. But the thing is, though, what I've found is that those shows are usually so good, so engrossing, so intense, like watching The Night Of or Mr. Robot, that once in a while you want something that you don't have to really invest much in, that you can kind of look up from your notepad, and
I guess.
Yeah. And it's easy watching. It's not a lot of substance. So you watch a Chicago Fire, Chicago PD. What else did they advertise? Chicago, what's the medical one? Chicago Hospital or whatever that
ER.
Chicago Med. Those were the three that I think they were advertising as they're starting up their season. And we record and we watch all of those, not because it's you know, banner TV, but because it's easy TV. You know, easy plots to follow. They're nice when you're kind of distracted, you're looking to unwind. You don't want to be mentally challenged by much. We also watch a show called Major Crimes that's on TNT, I think. And it's the same thing. It's not a bad show. It's a pretty good show. But you watch it because you're not always up for something that is going to be a workout to watch. That's, it's entertainment, but it's entertainment that you need to be thinking about. So sometimes I think TV or movies, it's the same reason why you always don't go to a foreign films or films with subtitles. You once in a while you want to go and see an action adventure or a spy thriller, something that's a little bit easier to digest. It's fun. You don't think about it when it's over. And I think it's the same way with television. There are shows that you watch just to kind of zone out, and because it's comforting and it's something to kind of relax you before you go to bed, rather than something that, you know, you're going to think about and discuss afterwards. So
yeah, I guess.
So I think that's where, you know, NBC, CBS, ABC, the Fox, I think that's the value of a lot of those shows, is that they are sort of the junk food for the mind, you know, kind of thing. And some of the shows are better than others. But, you know, it's, to me, they serve a purpose and serve a function.
Well, it should be NBC where your brain shuts down. Then I mean, A-Law looked terrible to me. And so far, they've not proven me wrong. Even like The Blacklist. Do you watch The Blacklist?
I used to watch The Blacklist, but that's another good example of a TV show that I think is good, and I would still be watching if my wife was still interested in the show. I think it's good. I like James Spader. I think the show was interesting, but it was, you know, I mean, it did not have the heft or the substance of the shows on pay cable or on streaming services. It just isn't that. It was a pleasant diversion, I thought, but nothing that it was going to haunt my dreams.
Yeah, I want haunt my dreams. Yeah. If I'm going to spend time with it, I want it to move my world.
I want to watch The Killing, and, you know, something like
yes,
something
right,
like
yeah.
that's going to challenge you, or even, you know, Mad Men or Better Call Saul, or there's so many really good TV shows, but, you know, you kind of work your way through those, and what's on tonight? Oh, good, we'll put on Chicago Med. You know, watch the worst doctors in Chicago.
I guess so.
So that's our pop culture recommendations. You know, take it for what it's worth. I'd recommend Dave's book. it sounds good to me, but the fall will challenge you a lot more than, say, Chicago PD. Let's put it that way.
All right.
So Packers lose a disappointing game, 17-14. They fall to 1-1 in the season. They come home. I guess they're going to be at Lambeau now through pretty much most of the month of October. They've got the right. Lions game, then I think there's a bye week, and then they got a couple more home games. So this kind of this middle section of the season coming up, you're going to be a lot of Lambeau Field action. So Dave and I are going to be at Lambeau next Sunday to watch the Packers, and then we'll somehow manage to squeeze in a podcast along the line, and we'll tell you about our experience at Lambeau, thanks to your generosity. And we'll also have some impressions from the, 22nd row of section, whatever, 141 or whatever it is.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll get that ironed out before game time.
I think it's our year.
Until that time, I'm Chris.
I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Theory. I'm Chris.
And I'm Dave.
And that's Packers Theory.